You are listening to Making Bank, where we uncover the mindset and success strategies of the top 1% so you can amplify your life and your business.
Welcome to Making Bank. I am Josh Felber, where we uncover the success strategies and the secrets of the top 1% so you can amplify and transform your life and your business today. I'm excited for today's guest. We got to connect a little while back. I've been following and studying his methods and his courses and everything for about a year now. And it's really an honor to be able to have him on the show. Ryan Levesque is a software entrepreneur and the author of the number one national best-selling book, Ask, as featured in Inc. magazine as the number one marketing book of 2015, and by Entrepreneur magazine as the number two must-read book for budding entrepreneurs. Ryan has used the Ask method to help build multi-million dollar businesses in 23 different industries, generating over $100 million in sales along the process. And since then, his students have used the Ask method in thousands of different industries to launch and scale their businesses online. Today, in addition to offering training, certification, and live events for entrepreneurs looking to launch and grow their business using the Ask method, Ryan is also an investor in a new software called Bucket.io. It's a segmentation software for entrepreneurs using and implementing the Ask method in their business. So I'm excited today to welcome Ryan Levesque to Making Bank.
Josh, my man, I'm excited to be here and just really looking forward to our conversation.
Awesome. Well, tell me a little bit about how you, because your background is not entrepreneurial. You have a degree from a university and psychology and all kinds of cool stuff I remember from talking with you. So fill us in a little bit and then kind of how you got started down this whole path.
Yeah, totally. So, you know, like so many of us doing what we're doing, like this, you know, I didn't grow up thinking I was going to do this. I went to college, I studied neuroscience and East Asian studies at Brown University. And after college, I ended up working on Wall Street in investment banking. And I had this itch. I wanted to go to China. Like I really just wanted to travel to China and work in China. And so I had this opportunity to move to China to lead a big expansion project for the company AIG. And this is in the early 2000s. And my wife and I spent almost 5 years out in China. And in 2008, when the world financial crisis hit, I literally walked into my office one day and the Wall Street Journal Asia edition had the headline, AIG to file for bankruptcy. And it was on that day that I literally typed up my resignation letter to my boss and handed it into him. And I decided that I wanted to pursue my entrepreneurial journey. And the first little business that we started, my wife and I started in a totally obscure market, teaching people how to make jewelry with Scrabble tiles. And that was our first little business, as funny as it sounds. And we went into that market, and then we went into the orchid care market, and we went into the memory improvement market. And then before you know it, I had started to develop this methodology that was working in all these markets. And I went into 23 different markets, all said and done. Did that for almost a decade, and then you're familiar with my story. I got very sick, and very sick after my first son was born, and ended up in the hospital. I spent 10 days in intensive care, came close to dying. And really just had this realization that I wanted to do something bigger with my life. I wanted, like so many of us, I felt like I had something more inside of me to give. And legacy started becoming really important. And so I decided to publish a book, Ask, basically revealing how I'd done it in all these different markets and really shift my focus to serving and teaching entrepreneurs so they could have a bigger impact in their business. And that really kind of takes us to today.
And so, along the way as you're building, we'll take a little step back. You have with the orchid care business, which I know you're still running, the jewelry business, and some of these different companies that you've built up to the Ask method. What along the way, those were all internet marketing businesses?
Yeah. So my expertise is selling online specifically, and like so many of us, like I came into this world and. It's funny when people who have met me in public don't really realize this, but I'm pretty introverted. Like I went into the online space because I was afraid to sell. Like and the first businesses that I started were all built around these personas because I was too afraid to be me in front of the business. So the Scrabble business was a persona. The Orchid Care business, even though we used my name, we created this persona. Like, I wasn't on camera. I wasn't actually speaking to customers. I was hiding behind a sales page. And I think for so many of us that are attracted to this world of kind of online, it's like it comes from that fear of rejection, right? And so for me, like, I'm not a salesperson. I don't do well, like, you know, in person, like selling. And so that was what originally really attracted me to this world, was I wanted something where I could build a future for my family. I wanted to have control over my own destiny. I wanted to have freedom when I worked, you know, where I lived, all that stuff. But I didn't want a business where I had to be, you know, on the phone selling or in front of people selling. And so I was really attracted to this idea of online marketing, where you could sell through a website, you could sell through a sales page, you could, you know, just use words on a page and people actually pay you money. It sounds crazy, but, you know, 10 plus years ago when I first started, I mean, that was like a revolutionary concept to me. It wasn't something that I knew existed.
What do you think that you attributed to your success with those businesses? Obviously, coming from a totally different background, than the online marketing and marketing in general, what was kind of one or two keys that you found that created that success for you?
So there's two things that come to mind. So number one is when I left my job, I was getting paid, you know, well at AIG. And when I left that job, I moved in with my wife, and we were living this crazy bi-country marriage. She was actually getting a PhD at Hong Kong University. I was based in Shanghai. So we're like literally flying between Shanghai and Hong Kong every couple of weeks to see each other. It's insane, right? And this is like in our, you know, our mid-20s. So I moved in basically with her in student housing. I donated everything that I owned except for what I could fit into two suitcases, and basically just got to work. And so it was kind of like I went from this very, you know, luxurious life, right? My company was paying for my apartment. I had a maid. I had all my meals cooked for me. I mean, had like that, you know, really nice life, to living in like a 400 square foot apartment, eating tuna fish sandwiches. Like, that was like the drop off. But the first thing that comes to mind, Josh, is this idea of, I don't want to call it forced poverty, but it basically was that, like, really made a distinction. Say, you know what, we're going to live really lean. So we're not going to go out to eat. We're not going to buy new stuff. We're just going to keep our expenses really, really, really tight, like as tight as possible. So I wasn't distracted by all the trappings of life, right? And I think that's a thing that traps a lot of people, is they have high overhead in their life, right? They have a nice car, they've got a nice house, they have, you know, maybe vacations that they take, they go to concerts, they do all these things. And for someone who's just starting out, it's very distracting. Now, after we left Hong Kong, we moved back to the United States with literally nothing. Like, my wife had two suitcases, I had two suitcases. We were starting from ground zero. So we moved into an apartment, we bought a $100 mattress that we put on the floor. We opened up a bank account in the United States. We got two of those soccer chairs, you know, like the parents
right.
sit
yeah,
up.
Yeah, when you open the bank account.
That was like
account.
The gift for opening up the bank account. That was our living room furniture, so we put that in the living room. We got a TV off of, what is it called, Goodwill. That was like $10. No cable, but we had the rabbit ears. And we had to jam the rabbit ears into the window to like extend the metal so we could get like better reception. And we got like three channels, and like, that's it. That was the only furniture that we had. Oh, and a desk that my wife's parents gave us, like an old particle board desk that was just like from the, I mean, it was like falling apart when we got it. And that was it. And I had a computer. We bought one car. I drive my wife to work every single day, and just living super lean like that. We had a $50 a week grocery budget, just purposely keeping things super tight and simple. And what that does is it creates just enough discomfort. Right? Just enough discomfort where you're saying, I don't want to live like this forever. And it allowed me, because we weren't distracting ourselves with everything that was going on, it allowed me to be really focused in those early days, which I think is really important. So that's the first thing. Second thing, Josh, was this shift in mindset. So that was kind of very practical thing that we did. The other thing was very much a shift in mindset. So I'd read a lot of success books, and they all kept telling me the same things. They all said, you know, write down on a piece of paper the amount of money that you want to make. And every day in the morning, you look yourself in the mirror and you say, I am going to make this money. You know, I have made $20,000 a month, or I have made $500,000 a year, whatever the thing is. And I was spinning my wheels. And I realized the reason for that, when I came back to my background in neuroscience and psychology, is I spent a lot of time at university studying the neuroscience of fear. And what I realized is that that scares you. When you actually put out a huge number that you're not sure if you can hit it, it paralyzes you with fear. So the shift that I made, Josh, is instead of thinking about how to make $500,000 a year, I ask myself a simple question every single day. What can I do today that's going to help our business grow by $500 this month? That's it. And the reason for that is $500 was an amount of money that I could get my head around. I could do things like, okay, well, what if we go from shipping our books out first class mail to media mail? That's going to save us like $1 per package. And if we ship 500 packages per month, awesome. That just saved us $500. We just made $500 more. Okay, awesome. And I just kept asking myself those questions. So instead of thinking big, I started thinking small. And when I did that, Josh, like things all of a sudden took off and we went from basically making nothing to $25,000 a month in 18 months. And up until that point, I was really spinning my wheels. So those are the two things, so forced poverty, and going from thinking big to thinking small.
Awesome. I mean, that's definitely some phenomenal bits of information, some really good golden nuggets. We got to take a quick break. Can you stick around for a minute?
Absolutely.
Awesome. I am Josh Felber. You're watching Making Bank, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Making Bank. I am Josh Felber, and we've been speaking with Ryan Levesque, and he's uncovered some really awesome nuggets here for you. First one was, you know, being trapped by high overhead. I think that's a key point. And, you know, really living lean as they were able to get their feet on the ground and just start to build their businesses, as well as a shift in mindset. He went from thinking big to now thinking small. And so that way he was able to wrap his head around and his brain was in fear mode to go after and continuously make and generate additional revenue of $500 every month. So two awesome insights, Ryan, and welcome back to Making Bank.
Josh, awesome to be here. Excited.
So as you're moving along, the businesses are growing and you I know you said you got sick and you were laid up in the hospital and you weren't sure because you just went in for, I think, like a routine check to see how you were doing because you were a little under the weather.
After my son was born, my son was 6 months old and my wife said, hey, you know, you should apply for life insurance because, if something were to ever happen to you, kind of the main breadwinner in the family, like it's not just the two of us anymore. It's like we've got, a human that we're responsible for. So I said, oh, totally. Like I'll totally apply for life insurance. And I just turned 30 years old. I applied for life insurance. And, if you've ever applied for life insurance, they send a medical examiner to your house. They do some blood work. They take your height, your weight, a few things like that. And then a few days later, you get the results from the exam. And so a few days later, I had a business trip to New York City. I went to New York, came back to Texas, and I had the letter, the life insurance letter waiting for me on my desk. I opened it up and the letter says, denied. I'm thinking, no, this has got to be something wrong here. Like I'm 30 years old. You know, I was an athlete growing up. I played soccer. I ran track. Like I was, a pretty healthy guy. And I said, there must be some mistakes. So I called up the life insurance agent and he says, Ryan, I thought it was a mistake. And he said, Ryan, it's not a mistake. And I also have your lab results in front of me as well from your blood work. And he said, you might want to sit down. And he then proceeded to read a series of numbers to me. I didn't know what they meant at the time, but I wrote it down and he said, he ended that phone call. He said, listen, Ryan, I'm not a doctor, but I really think you need to go see one. And so I wrote, hung up the phone and then I made the biggest mistake of my life. I went to Google and I looked up what the numbers meant. And Josh, the results in Google that came back when I typed in those numbers were kidney failure, renal system shutdown, and pancreatic cancer. And so I'm freaking out, right? I'm totally freaking out. And, later that night we put our son to bed. My wife casually asked me, she said, honey, we got the life insurance letter all set. And I said, well, not exactly. And I told her what, the situation, and I was still in denial at this point. So she freaks out, she breaks down and she calls the Ask a Nurse hotline and makes sure that we get the first doctor's appointment the next day. And this is at a point in my life where like, I didn't have like a doctor, like I wasn't going to the doctor, you know what I mean? Like I was just, I'm a man, I'm healthy. Like I don't, going to the doctor is what you do when you're a kid or when you're like old and sick. So I go to this guy, he sees me and, tell him the story. And he says, okay, well, we'll order some, blood work done. We'll have it done stat. We wait in the weight room. And when he comes out back into the waiting room to see us, his demeanor completely changed. And he looks me in the eye. And I remember it like it was yesterday. He grabs him by the shoulders and he says, Mr. Levesque, you should be in a coma right now. we're rushing you to the emergency room right now. So they rushed me to the ER, and it turns out I'd fallen to a state known as DKA. Right now, I know you can't see me, but you know, I'm in pretty decent shape. I weigh about 175 pounds right now. I had dropped down to 132 pounds. So it's 43 pounds lighter than I am right now. What ended up happening is my body was eating itself. My body was eating muscle tissue. And so I just attributed the weight loss to the fact that, you know, if you got kids, right, it's like, you know, I'm a new dad, not getting a lot of sleep, running a company, just not taking care of myself. Like, I just assumed it was that. I get there, fall into a state known as DKA, diabetic ketoacidosis, and spent the next 10 days in ICU, in intensive care. And I had a dialysis patient next to me and a cancer patient across the hall. And these were people at the end of life. These were people, you know, in their 80s, 90s. And here I am, 30 years old. And it's like, you know, what the F? You know, like, why am I here? What the hell happened? We didn't want to bring my son into the hospital because we're afraid that he would get sick. And so I had all this time alone. And it really forced me to reflect on my life. And if you've ever had an experience where you come to terms with your own mortality like that, it brings a clarity unlike anything else. And, you know, I had achieved some modest financial success, but I wasn't changing the world. You know, I just had a little business and little lifestyle business, was making decent money. And I came out of that, the hospital, and I said, you know, I have something more to give. Like, there's something, like so many of us, right? Like, we feel like, you know, I got more. There's like something inside me. Like, this can't be it. I have to do something bigger. And I decided that the thing that I was so passionate about was teaching. And I wanted to teach the methodology that had been so impactful for me and get it in the hands of millions of people. And I basically made that decision in the hospital. Then within the next year, I, you know, exited the hospital, made some changes in my life, and published the book Ask. And, you know, the rest is history. It went on to sell 100,000 copies of the book, became number one national bestseller. You mentioned about Inc. Magazine and Entrepreneur Magazine. It's been featured in a number of different places. And it's kind of led to, you know, really a movement where people are now using the Ask method in a major way. And it's what I eat, sleep, and breathe. It's what I'm so passionate about. And the reason why I am so passionate is I've seen it, how it's transformed my life and the businesses that I've been privileged to be involved in. But what's most exciting to me is I see every single day I get a Facebook message, an email, a letter in the mail from an entrepreneur who says, Ryan, the Ask method has transformed my life. It's transformed my business. It's transformed the life of my family. And for me, I mean, that gives you like the feels, man. I mean, that gives you the warm and fuzzies. And it's like, you do that, you get one of those, it's like your fuel every single day. You're like, you know, and it's almost like this, it's funny. It's almost like a drug in some ways, because you get high off of it. You see how people are changing. You're like, I want to do more of that. And it just energizes you. So, yeah, man, that's what brings us to today.
No, that's, you know, I think sometimes, you know, we have that where we have to have that, you know, shift in our life, and whether it was an experience like you or had, or just, you know, we hit a certain point, whether financially or whatever, you know, we lose it all, and to make that mind shift and make that change in our life to move forward. Tell us a little bit about maybe some of our viewers don't know what the Ask method is. You know, what is it and how does it all work?
Totally. Absolutely. So the Ask method is a marketing methodology that involves using a series of surveys to basically better serve your customers and better sell to your prospects. It helps you identify the different segments that exist in your market and how to speak and communicate with those different segments differently. And sometimes there are just certain small nuances in language when you're speaking to one type of person to another person that make all the difference in the world. And so the Ask method is all about a methodology that helps identify what those language patterns are and then better communicating with the different segments that exist in your market.
Okay. And so, you know, we have an online business and, you know, we want to know, hey, we're selling to men and women both. So, right. But obviously, so we're going to speak to a woman different than we do a man. And so with your, I guess, methodology you've created, then that's going to allow us to then differentiate, you know, and then direct those people to the information that's going to best fit them.
Totally. Absolutely. And it could be men and women. Maybe that segmentation makes sense in your market. It could be something that we call journey segmentation. So if you have a success path in your business, let's pretend you help people, you help people succeed in their online business. Well, there's a journey there, right? There's the person who's starting at ground zero. There's the person who has had a little bit of success but really wants to build their email list. There might be another segment, someone who is, they're already making six figures, but they're trying to break through that $1 million mark, right? And they're just stuck. And then maybe someone who is more of a marketing consultant or an agency, and they have clients. Each of those different segments of people have different language that they use. They have different pain points, different challenges, different places where they're stuck. Now, the problem is most people, let's say you have a product that can help all four of those groups of people. Most people, what they do is they have this one-size-fits-all marketing approach, right? Or they do the kitchen sink approach, which is like this. This is the most amazing product for you, whether you're just getting started, whether you're looking to build your list, whether you're looking to go from six to seven figures, or if you serve other businesses as a marketing consultant, this is the most important thing that you've ever read. And you're kind of like, you know, bull crap, right? I mean, right. It's like, no.
I'm guilty. Like, I've done that how before. Could this be for,
yeah, how could this be for everybody, right? And so the key is asking, hence the ask method, asking a few questions online before you begin selling someone. And the thing is, this is how we naturally communicate offline, right? When you have a conversation with someone, you know, someone walks up to you and says, you know, hey, what do you sell and is it right for me? You don't just go into your pitch. What do? You ask a few questions. Well, time out a second. You know, I don't know if what I do can help you, but if you take a moment to tell me a little bit about your situation, I can tell you if this is a good fit for you or if not, what I'd recommend that you do. It's really just translating that process online in a way that is easy, that is technologically simple to do, so it's not like this big burden, and in a way that allows you to sell so much more authentically, where you're not having to be sleazy or scammy. Like you can. This is how, you know, this is how humans communicate, and just taking that approach and putting it into a methodology that entrepreneurs can use online.
Yeah, and that's awesome. Tell me a little bit about, so how, you know, what's our first step with this? You know, how do we, you know, start to create this, and where do we go with the initial part of that?
So there's really three phases to the ask method. The first phase is discovery. Second phase is segment. Third phase is launch. The discovery phase is all about doing what we call a deep dive survey. A deep dive survey involves doing a survey online to uncover and identify the pain points that exist in your marketplace. This could be a survey that you send out to your email list. If you don't have an email list, it could literally be a few phone calls that you have with potential customers in your market, or just text message conversations where you're asking a few intentional questions. One of the questions that's most important to ask is what we call the single most important question, or SMIQ. And it's a question that sounds like this. When it comes to X, and I'll talk about X in a moment. When it comes to X, what's your single biggest challenge or frustration that you're running into right now? So let's say for a moment that you have a business where you help people, you help people with their Facebook marketing, as an example. So you would say, when it comes to advertising on Facebook, what's your single biggest challenge or frustration that you're running into right now? Right? Now, let's say, for example, to make a completely different example, I'll take a real example, one of our students. Let's pretend that you sell cooler trailers, so refrigerated trailers, for so big, you know, $25,000 refrigerated trailers to restaurant owners, produce transporters, people that like need to transport refrigerated items. So your question there might be, when it comes to transporting the refrigerated goods that you transport in your business, what's the biggest challenge or frustration that you're having right now? What you're trying to identify are, what are the pain points that exist in your market that aren't being met? And what is the language that people use to describe those pain points? See, the biggest mistake we make as marketers or entrepreneurs is we use language that makes sense to us, but it's not the language that our customers use. And so I like to say that you don't have to be a great copywriter to really write compelling and motivating and persuasive sales messaging. All you need to do is know what questions to ask your audience, because they'll give you the right language to use themselves. And so it all starts, that's the discovery phase, is all about discovering that pain that exists in your market. The segment phase is all about identifying the different segments that exist in your market so you can communicate with those segments differently. So in the cooler example, one of the segments that exists in that market are restaurant owners who need to transport a lot of refrigerated materials. That's like one segment. Another segment are produce growers, so people that have small farms and, you know, berry farms and things like that, and they need to transport their produce from the farm to where they're selling it, maybe at a market or maybe to a distributor. Another example would be someone who they do temporary food service. So someone who is, you know, does that, they've got a food truck at a fair, or they do festivals that are like 3 days long, and they need something to refrigerate their food while they're on site. So you can think about it. Those are three people that would buy the same product, a refrigerated trailer that you hitch on the back of your F-150, right? Your Ford F-150, but they are very different people. And so the segmentation process is all about how to speak to those different people differently, because they use different words to describe the same things. Even though you might be selling the same product to each of those segments. And a question I always love to ask people, so for someone listening to this, I love to say, you know, they might say, is the ask method right for you? And I say, well, let me ask you a question. Are you in a niche? Are you in a specific market? And everyone says, yes, I'm in a niche. I'm in a market. And then I ask, I say, do you sell a product in that niche? And they say, of course, yes, I sell a product or service, yes. And I said, well, let me ask you this then. Can your product or service serve different groups of people within that niche? The same product, can it help different types of people? And inevitably, almost 90% of people will say, yes, totally. So this is where the ask method comes in. Speaking to those different groups of people differently to better serve them and better sell the product that you're selling.
And no, that's awesome. So the discovery segment and then the launch, what, so say, I mean, if we're a brand new business just starting out online, what's the best way? I mean, obviously we don't have anybody to go do a survey directly in a list or anything like that. So, I mean, what do you recommend kind of like a first step for them? Do they go out to Facebook or Google and just post out a survey from that?
Basically, the best thing to do for someone who doesn't have a list, this is something that we teach in our training, is to go out to places where your market is already hanging out. So a couple examples. You can go to forums. You can go to Facebook groups. You might go to your personal network of you know, contacts that you have. And really what you do is you say, hey, I'd love to ask you a question. I'm working on this project right now where I'm trying to better understand the biggest challenge and frustrations people are having when it comes to this. And I'm wondering, would you be open to me asking you a few questions about this situation? Would that be cool? And then once they say yes, that opens up the door to have a series of one-on-one interactions. Now, these one-on-one interactions, if you're comfortable hopping on the phone, get on the phone. Just ask a few questions. Instead of running a survey to a list, get on the phone and ask the questions. Like you and I, we could ask the questions right here doing in an interview like this. Now, if you're the type of person that's like a little bit shy, you're not, you know, thrilled with that. I mean, heck, it can just be a Facebook Messenger conversation back and forth, right? Hey, first question, when it comes to, you know, transporting your refrigerated goods, what's the biggest challenge or frustration you're having right now? You're just having this one-on-one conversation. And now people say, but how many of these do I need to have? Like that, you know, do I need to have a million of these? Well, the way the math works out, Josh, is pretty simple. One individual conversation like this is worth 25 survey responses because you're able to go so much deeper, right? So, you know, if you have an email list, the easy button is you just send a link in an email and get 250 people to fill out one of these surveys. But the alternative, instead of 250 people filling out a survey, just have 10 one-on-one conversations. And you're getting the same information because you're able to go so much deeper in those one-on-one conversations. So if you're just starting out, you don't have a list, that's what I would say. First step is this. Identify what's your SMIQ. What's your single most important question? That's the most important question that you want to ask people in your world. From there, you can ask a whole bunch of other questions. You can ask about, you know, for someone in the cooler example, you might want to know what produce do you sell? You might want to know how much money do you make in your business? How long have you been in business? How much staff do you have? All these kind of questions to better dimensionalize that business, that person. But if you were to ask just one question and one question only, it's that SMIQ, single most important question. When it comes to X, what's your biggest challenge or frustration?
That's some great insight. And I think, whether you're a new business or an established business, you know, it's definitely something everybody needs to be doing to move them to the next level. I know we recently did, and actually it was all over the phone, We did a survey of roughly about 20 different people that bought one of our acne care products for our skincare business, and you know, was like you said, was able to really dive.
So, dimensionalize a little bit, like for someone doing this who's like, is it really worth doing it? I mean, you're a smart guy. You've been running your business for, you know a lot of stuff. You know your market.
Right.
What was one of the takeaways that comes to mind when you got on the phone with 20 people? What was a surprise or something that was unexpected?
I wasn't the one on the phone. we actually had somebody doing it.
By the way, I'm so glad you brought that up. So for someone listening to this, is like, I don't really want to do this. I want to do it at the time. You can go on Upwork.
Sure.
There are so many people who would love to do this type of work for, $15-$20 an hour. There's so many people. So anyways, when you analyzed or you heard back the report from this person, was there anything that stood out to you where you're like, whoa, anything?
I think just what we found is, you know, where we initially thought kind of our market segment was a whole totally different age bracket. We were thinking they were kind of in that older age bracket of that 44 to 50 range, but we actually found out they were more in that 25 to 35 range. So obviously you're going to speak to both of those areas, you know, totally different, than if you were just talking to a 50-year-old person like, hey, clear up your acne, you know, because you're young and eating, you know, whatever. But hey, you know, we got to speak to that younger demographic than the older one. So
totally. And, you know, and it's like, you know, when you come up with case studies, right, or testimonials, you know, if you put a 55-year-old woman and it's a 25-year-old woman who's the potential buyer, there's a mismatch. And that can actually unsell. Even if the 55-year-old woman says, this is the best product I've ever bought ever, 25-year-old woman looks at that and she's thinking, this isn't for me. This is for old ladies, right? So you can actually, your testimonials, the stories that you tell, the references, right? When you're talking about things like cars and movies and music, all of these things that you might weave into your marketing, you want the 25-year-old to be able to identify with it rather than the 55-year-old. So that's great. I mean, that's such an important insight. Thank you for sharing that.
Oh, definitely. And so then our next step is then, you know, we're going to be doing a full deep dive survey to our full list of to then segment down based on what people bought and then do some smaller surveys from there.
Brilliant.
For that as well. So we got a few minutes left. I want to maybe see two action points you'd like to let people take away today that they can go implement and start doing. Would be pretty awesome.
Totally. So, you know, really the best way to get started, we kind of covered it already, right? So first thing is this, come up with what your single most important question is. And for that, you really got to get clear on what your goal is. Are you trying to figure out what product to sell next? Are you trying to figure out why your how to better market a product that you're already selling? Are you trying to figure out if a niche that you're considering pursuing, is there enough demand? Are people in enough pain for you to consider pursuing it? Once you've decided what your goal is, then from that, come up with that single most important question. When it comes to X, what's your biggest challenge or frustration? So that's the first thing. Second thing is just find one person, test it out, right? Just identify one person that is, you know, a woman who needs help with their skin. It could be anybody. It could be your aunt. It could be your mom. It could be your neighbor. It could be your coworker, whatever. And you just reach out and say, hey, I'm working on this project. I'm looking to solve this problem and I'm trying to get a little bit of insight. And I'm wondering, would you be open to answering a few questions? And when the first person says yes, just ask them that single most important question and then you're off to the races.
Awesome. No, that's some great action steps for you guys to take away and start doing. I mean, don't sit there and wait for this. You know, it doesn't take a whole lot of time to put it together. And like Ryan and I said, you can go out and find somebody if you want to have them jump on the phone and do the surveys, you know, directly. So what's one piece of technology that you can't live without?
One piece of technology that I can't live without. That's a really good one. You know, related to this, if you're going to do the phone interviews, I'll give a semi not obvious one is I use a program called Call Recorder on Skype. Now, so when I do these phone interviews, I love doing it on Skype because one, it protects your phone number. So you don't have to have like a, you know, if you don't want to use your cell phone, you don't want to give out, your cell phone to people. You can do it on Skype. And number two, it's super easy to record. And so when I do these phone calls, I love to record them and then transcribe them. So I record them using Call Recorder, and then I'll send them to, here's one to write down as well. I send them to a service called Rev.com, R-E-V.com. And basically Rev.com is a transcription service. So you do a 20-minute phone call with someone, have it transcribed, and then what you have through that is your copy is practically literally written for you. All you need to do is just copy and paste those words, put them on your website with a few little tweaks and massaging, and you've got your headline, you've got your bullets, you've got, you know, your landing page copy, it's all written for you. So I'll say Call Recorder plus Rev.com is the technology that I can't live without.
Fantastic, man. And just one piece of success advice you want to just leave everybody with.
You know, this is the most powerful piece of advice that I can give you is something that one of my mentors gave me, and it goes like this. You don't have to get it perfect. You just have to get it going. You know, movement breeds clarity. Just keep moving forward. You might be scared to do this, and this is where you just say, screw it, just do it. I'm going to do one of these damn interviews, and you just, whatever. You know, I might look like a fool. I might say stupid stuff, but you don't have to get it perfect. You just got to get it going.
Cool, man. Awesome. And where can people find out about you? And I know you got a new software, Bucket.io, that'll help people segment and survey and everything that you've put together. Give us a little insight.
Absolutely. So we've got some great free resources at askmethod.com. So at askmethod.com, we've got a free 13-page PDF blueprint that walks through the entire Ask Method. So if you're like a visual person, you want to see examples and you want to know, like, what is this Ask Method all about? How is it all tied together? What's the big deal? That's a great place to start. You can also get a free copy of our physical book on our website. The book is called Ask. You can buy it on Amazon for 10, 15 bucks, whatever it is. But you can get a free copy on our website. We just ask that you pay a few dollars shipping and handling. So that's on askmethod.com. And then as far as like the survey technology to do the deep dive survey that we talked about, as well as the segmentation, Josh mentioned that I'm an investor in a piece of technology that I believe is the future of online marketing. It's called Bucket.io. Bucket.io. And if you go to that page there, you'll have an opportunity to check it out, test drive it, and start using it in your business.
And I know the software looks really awesome. We've used other different platforms, you know, up until now. So I'm excited for that to be released first of the year, I think, right?
Absolutely. Yep, exactly. First of the year.
Cool. Ryan, it was an honor, and I really appreciate your time today. We have so much information that we're able to dig out for people today. So again, thank you for coming on Making Bank.
Josh, it's been awesome. Really grateful for the opportunity and look forward to connecting again sometime soon.
Cool. I am Josh Felber. You're watching Making Bank, where we uncover the success strategies and the secrets of the top 1%. Get out and be extraordinary.
Thank you for listening to Making Bank. If you have enjoyed this episode, please leave a review. And sharing is caring. Follow Josh Felber on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram for more. You can also listen to Making Bank on Amazon Alexa, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and watch on Apple TV, Success Thinkers Network, Amazon Fire, and YouTube.